each pillar had a name on it. And it was just falling into a heap. He says, no more sand for a foundation. No more sand. You're going to be solid. Because what is not of me is going to be shaken till it's gone. So that is what I shared seen this morning. He's doing a work in the valley here. The whole area was the shaking part. I didn't see beyond the valley here, but he's shaking there also. So.
Thank you. So instead of moving right on past that, let's just close your eyes. I want you to feel what it feels like in the room right now. A change has already started. What does it feel like to be in the atmosphere of change? What's the foundation under you feel like? Are things shifting? Are things changing? Holy Spirit saying, will you say yes to me? And whatever I'm bringing, will you say yes? Will you allow me to bring change? If you can do that, if you can agree with that, just say yes. Not bad, Lord. Not bad. We're talking about who God is, who the Father is, more specifically, the Father. In the Psalms, David writes about his relationship with his Father, our Father, who art in heaven. He talks about his relationship with the Father. And so he writes psalms about the relationship with the Father. And so we're in the process of discovering what it is David knew about his Father, what David knew about God. And today we want to talk about the faithfulness of God. It starts out in Psalm 31. This is the text that we're taking this understanding from. David wrote these words, O Lord, I have come to you for protection. Don't let me be disgraced. Save me, for you know what is right. So there he reveals something else about the Father. Turn your ear to listen to me. Rescue me quickly. Be my rock of protection, a fortress where I will be safe. You are my rock and my fortress. So David says another thing. That's another part of the revelation that comes from David about his Father. You are my rock and fortress. For the honor of your name, lead me out of this danger. Pull me from the trap of my enemy that my enemies set for me, for I find protection in you alone. Again, a revelation of how he looked at the Father. He was not going to go to any other God. He was going to go to his Father. I entrust my spirit into your hand. When you get to this place in the Word where you start letting it, when you encounter the Word, literally, the Word encounters you. So when I was reading that, I was thinking, have I entrusted my spirit to him? Have I entrusted myself to him? Have I allowed him to have that kind of an influence over my life, where if I've entrusted my spirit to him, have I given myself to him? Rescue me, Lord, for you are a faithful God. So all this is in the context of family. We're talking about Father. We're talking about his children. We're talking about the family of God. We're talking about our relationships with each other. And I think that where we're going is all about family. all about family. The Lord gave me a word a while back that, and where he said, because I was asking what revival looked like. What would it look like if the church was revived? And he said, it'd look like a healthy family. A healthy family is not just our relationships with each other, but it's the way we live our lives together, the way we work together. And you could see that today. It happened between Dwayne and Diane and Annie later on. It all worked together. They worked together to form an encounter with God today. It started out with Dwayne opening his heart up, and then Diane feeling like that what she had seen in this vision was part of the picture, and then Annie couldn't help herself. She had to come up and bring the gospel into the whole thing, and it all came together. That's what a healthy family looks like. It doesn't look like one person up here making decisions a week ago about how Sunday was going to look. It happens because we submit ourselves to what God is doing in our midst. And it can change at any moment. It can change. It can reorder itself. It can reconfigure itself. And so it's all in the context of family. This family that we were born again into. It says in John 1, to all who believe in him, accept him, and given the right to, they are given the right. He gave the right to become children of God. It's a right that we have. We're reborn, not with physical birth resulting from human passion or plan, but a birth that comes from God. We were born into this family because of what God did. And then again in Ephesians 1, God decided in advance to adopt us into his own family by bringing us to himself through Christ, Jesus Christ. This he wanted to do. He wanted to adopt us into his family. And I love this. It gave him great pleasure. This is one of the key scriptures I use, by the way, at memorial services and funerals. Because the big fear that people have when they're at the end of their life is there's going to be some kind of a separation between them and God. And this says that we are adopted. He brought us into his family, and he really, really liked what he was doing. He didn't do it because he had to. It brought him great pleasure. So I think it's comforting. It's comforting. Ephesians 1, chapter 1, verse 5 is comforting to us. It should be a comfort to us that he didn't bring you into his family because he had no other choice, and he was like running out of ideas. So I guess I'll have to bring Dan into my family, you know. I guess. I mean, it's not like that. From before the world was created, before creation, he wanted us in his family. There are examples of God's faithfulness, of his covenants to Noah, Ishmael, Moses. They're in the notes. I'm not going to talk about those necessarily. There's the issue of sin and how sin affected the faithfulness of God. And basically, sin caused God to send his son for his son to be atoned for our sin, for the promises to remove sin, to be fulfilled. And he ordained Jesus as the author of eternal salvation. And then he tossed our sin into the deepest sea. That's how family handles sin. That's how a family, a healthy family, handles sin. They don't put it up on the wall in a frame and say, yeah, you did that, and you're going to pay the price for it. You know, that's not how a family deals with sin. A family deals with sin the same way that God deals with sin. And it's all right there in those little bullet points. He's faithful to his promises, and there's some promises that are there. But I want to spend most of this time that I'm going to talk for a little bit, and then we're going to go back into worship for a little bit. I feel like there is that we need to seal today. Because like I said, change has already started. We're not trying to initiate change anymore. The change has begun. What's interesting is last night, some things happened, and there was some frustration with things, and we had a conversation, some of us in the room last night after we were finished, and said, you know, this is really important. We want to fight for this. And I kind of left feeling like, some things were undone. We needed to, and yet the Lord was saying through the whole time we were talking, I got this. And then this morning was a result of what happened last night. Yeah. I think you may have thought, man, Dwayne, what a job he did leading worship. He was broken today because of what happened last night. So I hate to be too linear, but these things build upon each other. Our experiences build upon each other. What happened today is a reflection of what we encountered last night. What will happen tonight at Deep Roots is carried forward out of today. And that momentum is what happens in the midst of change. Change isn't usually one big bang. It's usually a series of encounters with God that shift our heart and get us all going the same direction. And that's the key to family, is we're all going the same direction. Doesn't mean we're all alike and we're in lockstep with each other or we're repeating some mantra that the leader said is important. But what it does mean is we are a tribe moving together. We're moving together as a family. Oh, sorry. Yeah. the native voice came out. Yeah. So I want to talk about the orphan spirit. And I read a great book called Sonship. Last couple weeks, I've been reading this book called Sonship, A Journey into the Father's Heart, because of what we're studying. I wanted to gather some resources in my brain for understanding the Father's heart. It's a good book, really good book. And it has a whole chapter on sonship, and a lot of this is drawn from that. The writer of that book says, "When the Lord opened my eyes to this verse in John 14, I saw that this verse could be the key verse to the whole New Testament." Listen to what he's saying. Perhaps even the entire Bible. This verse we're about ready to... In studying this verse, he realized that it could be the whole Bible synthesized, which is a challenge to wrap your head around. The verse has changed everything for me. That's why I think it's important that we're talking about this today. It's no mistake or accident that we're talking about this today. It is amazing when an odd little verse suddenly comes into incredible significance. The verse that has changed everything for me is John 14, verse 18. It's a simple little verse, but there is so much in it. Jesus said it, and John wrote it down. And I want to add this. The Father said it. Jesus heard him and repeated it. The Father said it. Jesus heard him and repeated it, and John wrote it down. And this is the verse. "I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you." When this perspective dawned on me for the first time in my life, that I began to understand the basic problem of humanity, the basic problem not only of our individual struggles, but the struggles we have in relationship with each other, the basic problem of church life, the friction between denominations, family disputes, and even wars between nations, I suddenly saw the root problem of humanity's struggle on this earth through history. And I just want to say that these words, "I will not leave you as orphans, I will come to you," a lot of times are attributed directly to Jesus. I think they're the Father's heart. I think Jesus was constantly listening to what the Father was saying. And he was just repeating what the Father was saying. The Father was saying, "I'm not going to leave you as orphans, I'll come to you." It says in John chapter 12, verse 49, "I don't speak on my own authority." This is Jesus. Jesus says, "The Father who sent me has commanded me what to say and how to say it." Isn't that interesting? What to say and how to say it. "And I know his commands lead to eternal life. So I say whatever the Father tells me to say." And I would even go further and say Jesus was hearing the Father's voice, and he was just repeating what the Father was saying. The Father didn't go, "Hey, Jesus, say this." That's not the kind of relationship a son has with the Father. A really good son listens to his father's voice and says, "This is what I say, because this is what the Father's saying to me. I say this to you." The Father's words are echoed in the heart of Jesus. "I'll not leave you as orphans. I will come to you." This faithful promise is reverberated through the ages. And I just want to say this. The whole human race is orphaned. Was orphaned. We'll find that out pretty quick. So the orphan spirit was conceived before man was even created. I didn't realize this. This is one of the things I gained from reading this book. To understand the worldview of orphanism, we need to trace it back to the origin, the fall of Lucifer. So the text, the specific text reads, "How are you fallen from heaven, O shining star, son of morning, son of the morning? You have been thrown down to the earth, you who destroyed the nations of the world." This is out of Isaiah 14. And then he makes three I will statements. And these are I will statements that Lucifer made, Satan made, whoever, whatever you want to call him. And one of the statements he makes is, "I will climb to the highest heavens and be like the Most High God," Most High. He wasn't saying he would be like God. He wasn't saying that he would walk alongside in partnership. He didn't want to be partnered with God. He wanted to be God. He wanted to take God's role on and then have God step out of the way so that he could be God. He didn't want to be God on behalf of God. He wanted to be God on behalf of himself. He wanted to be God. So Satan rejected God as Father. He rejected his relationship with God and lost that. He was orphaned. He was cast out of heaven. He wanted to be fatherless. He desired to be fatherless. He didn't want a relationship with a father. And he is an orphan who wants to be an orphan. He had a perfect revelation of who God was. Satan had a perfect revelation of who God was, and he chose to reject it. And so he was thrown to earth, and he became the ultimate orphan spirit. Satan himself became the orphan spirit on the earth. In fact, the Apostle Paul had a revelation of this truth when he said this: "You used to live in sin just like the rest of the world, obeying the devil, the commander of the powers of the unseen world. He is the spirit at work in the hearts of those who refuse to obey God." That orphan spirit is the spirit that's in that works in the hearts of people who refuse to obey God or refuse to let the Father be their Father. Prior to becoming Christians, we were all living our lives under the influence and leadership of the evil one. We know that. What we are set free from as we gave our lives, and a couple people came forth and did this today. They came up forth. That's weird. They came up and did this today. They gave themselves up to Jesus. They gave up that connection with evil and then joined themselves to the Father and said, "I want you to be my Father." So he was leading us in disobedience. He was leading us into our own orphanness. Satan was leading us into our own orphanness. And I can't say this strong enough. There was an allegiance that developed between man and the enemy. There was an allegiance. The one who had the original orphan spirit brought us into relationship with him. Now we're going to find out where man's orphan spirit came from, and it starts from the very beginning. In Genesis chapter 2, verse 7, it says, "God formed the man from the dust of the ground." He was forming this man, and there came a time when he was fully formed, and he had a perfect male body. He was completely formed, but he was not living yet. And God put his face up to man's face, which is the most intimate thing that you can possibly do, and he breathed into the man. And one of the things the writer of the book said is, can you imagine what the angels were thinking? Like, what is this? What's happening here? God creates a man, comes face to face with him, and it looks like he's kissing him. He looks like there's intimacy here. What's happening is he's breathing life into man. The Father breathes life into man. At that point, he became rooted and grounded in the Father's love. That very moment, he opened his eyes. So the Father's breathing life into his lungs. He's right here. The Father's right here in front of him. And he breathes life into Adam's lungs. Man's lungs. He didn't have a name yet. But he breathed into him. And at some point, Adam opens his eyes. And the first thing he sees is the Father's face breathing into him. And he was instantly smitten, wrapped up in the Father's love. And it changed him forever. Adam and Eve had this oneness. They were one with God. Just as they desired to be close together, God created a wonderful environment, a place for them to live in, Eden. And Adam and Eve lived in this garden. Adam and Eve lived in this garden, totally saturated in the love of the Father. They were one. So he created Adam. He created Eve because he wanted a helpmate. What's interesting is that up to this point, they were just called man. I mean, they were man and woman, but they were one flesh. They were one. Eve didn't get her name until after they fell. God had intended for them to be one. He created Adam. He created a helper for Adam because he didn't want him to be alone, but they were one before God. That's remarkable. Isn't that stunning? The way he created was, he created man, he created a helper for man. They were one in the garden with God, one with him. Totally saturated in the love of the Father. And he communed with them every day. So the first part of Satan's trap was to promise the woman that if she ate from the tree, she'd be like God. Well, do you want to be like Jesus? Don't be so harsh on Eve. Because what he said is you'll be like God. I want to be like Jesus. Somebody could come to me and say, if you just do this, you'll be just like Jesus. It's not far-fetched to see why Eve would fall into this trap. She wanted to be like God. She was in perfect union with him. But you notice that he came to her separate from Adam. He didn't come to both of them together. He came to Eve, and he said, you want to be like God? Just eat this apple. They were meant to be totally together. God had created this perfect environment for them. Then Satan showed her that the fruit was beautiful, and the woman looked at the fruit and saw the fruit was beautiful. She saw that it was good. Eve reached out and took the fruit and ate it, and when she ate it, what happened? What happened when she ate the fruit? Nothing. Nothing happened. Nothing happened. Because he'd only reached out to half of the one, Adam and Eve. Adam and Eve were so united they couldn't even sin individually. It wasn't until he ate the apple that both of their eyes were open and the trap was sprung. It was done. The oneness between them was gone. It says in Genesis chapter 3, then man, Adam, named his wife Eve. When they felt the separateness from each other, when the oneness was broken, that's when he called her Eve. She became something. I believe with all my heart, before that happened, there were no names. They were literally one. That's the power of marriage. I mean, that's why we put so much power, put so much value into marriage, is because this is the picture we look at before the fall. They are literally one. It's kind of scary if you're married, you know, because we look at each other as, I mean, especially in this culture, we're individuals. I have to have my individuality. And my heart now in my relationship with Jody is I'm trying to figure out how we can be more one, not how we can be more individual. The world's convinced me that we're individuals. Now I'm trying to convince myself that we're one again, that we're one, and how we operate as one. It was interesting. I was talking to Nedra last night, Nedra and Ian from the House of Prayer. Nedra was here doing some work, and I was asking her, about going to one thing. And I've watched it every year on TV, but I've never, it's a gathering in Kansas City on the first of the year, leading up to the first year. I asked her whether it made any difference if you went or not. Because I've been to gatherings and sometimes there's a feeling in the room that can't be communicated through video, no matter how much streaming you're doing. And I asked her whether that was important. She said, oh yes, oh yeah, it's nothing like you see on TV. It doesn't feel like that at all. And she says, and if there's any way possible, you need to go with your wife because you need to experience this together. And I thought, oh my gosh. I just don't think that way. I don't think, I try to let her be herself, but I think in the process of letting her be herself, I don't pursue oneness with her as intentionally as I could. And so it changed the way I looked at it last night. So God was driving them out of the garden. He was pushing them out of being able to experience the Father's love. They must have known that if they left the garden, that relationship was once ended. James Jordan, the author of this book, Sonship, says this: in leaving the garden, they were leaving the environment of the Father's love and becoming more like the one cast out of heaven. There was someone cast out of Eden. There was somebody cast out of God's presence before Adam and Eve. He didn't just fall from heaven. He was booted out of heaven. He was forced to leave heaven. And when Adam and Eve were banished from the Father's presence, it was the same dynamic. It was the same dynamic there that's happening to them. It gets a whole lot worse when the one who is cast out of earth like a lightning bolt began to create this deception that they bought into. A truly unholy alliance began to develop between the orphan spirit in man and the one who is cast out from man by God, or cast out of heaven by God. A truly unholy alliance began to develop. And they were totally ignorant of this. Adam and Eve had no idea that they were creating an alliance with the other being who was cast out of God's presence. It's just phenomenal. Because of his faithfulness and compassion, God sends lots of people to try to convince these humanity who has now an orphan spirit, tries to convince them of his love for them. He sends kings and priests and lawgivers and judges, and what he wants to do is he wants to express his love and show that they can be free of all this suffering. He calls a nation of people to be witness to all that's inadequate. The whole human race is descending into an orphan life of suffering, experiencing extraordinary levels of loneliness and brokenness. And it seems to be ramping up. And now, more than ever, you're seeing this orphan spirit in the earth. It's alive and well in the media. It's alive and well in politics. It's alive and well in the church. I'm not saying that we're orphans. I'm saying that orphan, that acting like an orphan, is part of what the way we live our lives. He did all this, and yet not one of them could perfectly express his heart. Not one. Finally, the Father sends his own Son, who would be the perfect representation of himself. Remember what the phrase is? I will not leave you as orphans. That's what the Father wanted them to know, and he did it through the prophets. He did it through David. David talked about his faithfulness, and he said, he's not going to leave you as orphans. David knew that he was protected by God. David had this freedom from the orphan spirit that caused him, not total freedom, but when he writes from the perspective of someone who's not an orphan. He writes from the perspective of somebody who's a son, right? And when he writes in Psalms, it sounds like he's a son of God, like he knows God. He's not writing from the perspective of an orphan. So finally, the Father sends his own Son as a perfect representation of himself. Jesus was completely different from any human, mostly because he was totally disconnected from the orphan system. He was completely disconnected from this whole orphan system that was on the earth. He was different than every other human. No human was like him. And so when he says things about himself and you think, oh, I can't imagine being that confident in who I am. He wasn't under the power of an orphan spirit. He didn't struggle with that. That wasn't who he was. He knew who his Father was. In fact, he kept trying to convince everybody that he ran into who their Father was. But still, sin got in the way. In the last days before he was killed, he finally was able to say what had been boiling down in the Father's heart like a volcano for generations. This thought had been boiling in the Father's heart. And out of God's faithfulness in his heart, the Father was finally able to express what he wanted to say. I'm not going to leave you as orphans. I will not leave you as orphans. I will come to you. As the Father saw them going out of heaven, going out of the garden into orphanage, he had to stay behind. But he sent his Son to break down everything that stands between him and us and makes the promise. This is in 2 Corinthians 6. I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters. That's his promise to us. I will be a father to you, and you will be my sons and daughters. Jesus is not the doorway. Jesus is not the doorway to get into heaven. He's the door for the Father to come to us. We think that Jesus is the door to get to the Father. Jesus is a door for the Father to get to us. The Father's always wanted to restore us out of this orphanness. He's always wanted to break us from the bondage of this orphanness. And the Father, Jesus, was a doorway for that to happen. He had a way to get to us. He had a way to access our hearts. He had a way to pull himself in. It's interesting, the curtain in the temple, when Jesus died, that was torn from top to bottom, wasn't torn so that we could get into the Holy of Holies. The curtain was torn so that God could get out of the Holy of Holies into the earth and set the earth free, set humanity free from the orphan spirit. So the gospel is simply this. It's about a faithful father who lost his kids and wants them back. out of a faithful heart, he sends his son to bring us home. He said, son, go and bring them home. Whoever wants to come, bring them home. This is the same faithfulness that David experienced and recorded for us in the Psalms. And you can see that in Deuteronomy, he says, God says this, the Lord did not set his heart on you and choose you because you were more numerous than any other nations. He's talking to Israel. For you were the smallest of all nations. Rather, it was simply that the Lord loves you. And the reason why he sent his son wasn't because he had to, is because he simply wanted to. That's the Father's heart. I love you so much. I'm going to send my son. He's going to break the power of the orphan spirit over your life, and you're going to be part of the family of God. That's why I think it's so critical that we see our dynamic as a family together. Can we have the worship team come back up? It's so important that we see that we're a family, because we act like an organization. The church acts like an organization. We have a CEO, and we have a board of directors, and we have all the peasants who work to make the organization run. That is not God's heart. He's always been a father. He's always had a family at the center of what he thought was most important. He always placed himself as the father of the family. He was calling us home to himself. He was calling us home. Listen, you guys. You may struggle with the orphan spirit, but if you're a believer, you are not an orphan. You are part of a family. You're not an orphan. And I know that you're going to hear this, especially in the next, I don't know, couple months, year or so, you're going to hear orphan spirit come up a lot. And the reason why I'm sharing this with you today is you need to know who you are. You are not orphans. You belong to someone. You belong to the Father. You belong to that family. And so whenever you hear the orphan spirit, you can say, well, yeah, that's the way it used to be. That's who I was, but that's not who I am. I'm not an orphan. I'm part of something. I'm part of the family of God. And you're not part of the family of God because you did something. It wasn't you choosing Jesus. It was the Father coming to get you and bring you home. He's brought you home into the family. He's brought you home. So anytime we ever gather here, this is a family gathering. This isn't a church service. This is like we set the bar so low that the family only meets once a week. I mean, that's the reality of where we live our lives. We set the bar so low that it only takes 2 hours a week for a family to make it. That is not a healthy family. I mean, there are times when things are happening in our lives. Right now, Mick and Lana Young, who many of you know, their son Peter, his wife had a stroke, and she's in Portland at OHSU. And the update is, there's a good update today. She's out of ICU, and the kids are going to come and see her tonight. That's remarkable. She's a 32-year-old woman who had a stroke, and now she's recovering. But she still needs our prayers. That's what family does. Family doesn't go, oh, poor Mick and Lana. You know, that's not what we do. We rally around each other. Last week, Randy went back and prayed for the kids, and the kids came up and hugged him. I saw a video because Kevin took a video and sent it to me. And they hugged him because Jody said that was part of his healing, to be hugged. That's what a family does. A family doesn't have a formal prayer service and a sacred assembly. A family just embraces each other, holds each other, and moves through life together. You guys, every single one of you is important. Not to me or to Evangel, but to the Father. Every single one. And every moment we spend together, we can become a healthier family. And I believe that when we go into worship right now, we have an opportunity to enter back in to that strengthening, family strengthening dynamic. And so I just encourage you to move. You've been sitting there for about 30 minutes now. Move. Get out of your chair. Walk around here. Pace around here. How do I become a stronger part of this family? What do I have? What am I bringing to the table? Who am I in the midst of these people? How can I be a stronger family member? How can I be connected, more well connected to these people? And then just enter into worship with that kind of sense about who you are. You're part of something. And it's not my idea. It didn't come out of a book. It came out of the Father's heart. This is God's heart. He wants us to be a healthy family.